Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast lead over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Nothing like jumping right in, huh? How are we, everybody? Hope you're doing well today. It is Tuesday. It is Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com radio. My name is John Rook as we start our second week of the program for the 2008 season. Let me preface what we're going to get into today just by giving you a little background here. We strive first and foremost to basically tell you everything that's going on. We have no secrets here. We want you to know what's happening in Patriots Nation and here at Patriots HQ, as the advertisement goes, and all that stuff. We're getting ready, actually, believe it or not, and I know some of you, especially here in the local area in New England, are aware of this, but this is really for all Patriots fans because we want everybody to kind of pay attention to it. But coming up this Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock here at the stadium will be the official, shall we say, induction of all of the Patriots players into the Patriots Hall of Fame, and, of course, the inclusion of Ben Coates into the Patriots Hall of Fame.
Hey, I'm okay.
Yep, John Hanna. Right, exactly. And John Hanna will be there. The best part about this is, of course, is they're opening up the Patriots Hall of Fame for the first time. So if you're in New England, if you're in the area on Saturday afternoon, this is free and open to everyone. But you can't get into the hall until Monday, right? Is that okay? Thank you very much. All right, I want to make sure that we have that. The induction ceremony, however, you can come to. So what we're looking for is if you are in the area, if you're a Patriots fan, if you've, you know, you happen to be Boston, Providence, points in between, all throughout New England, you want to come down for a little bit of this slice of history, we want you to come by at 3 o'clock Saturday afternoon in the plaza right out in front of the stadium and the Patriots Hall of Fame. Thank you, because Andre Tippett will be there as well. And you are welcome to attend the ceremonies as they're being held again outside. And, yes, it's because not everything is quite finished yet inside. That opening will be Monday, as I've just learned. But still, you are welcome to attend. It is free and open to the public on Saturday afternoon. Should go from about 3 till about 4:30 Saturday afternoon. We induct Ben Coates into the Patriots Hall of Fame and re-induct, if you will, the other 12 members of the Patriots Hall of Fame. And all members, those who are still with us, of course, will be there. But representatives of a couple of the deceased players' families will be there in attendance as well. So it's a pretty cool deal. It's going to be my privilege and pleasure to be up on the dais with the voice of the Patriots, Gil Santos, and we'll be making all of these inductions, and it's going to be a neat day to be a Patriot and to be a Patriot fan. So we hope that you'll take some time to come out and join us. And the reason that I kind of sound like I'm a little rushed and a little hurried today is because I'm in the studios just down the hallway here, the Kraft Sports Productions, and we're recording all of the bios and all the voiceover for all the bios for all these players.
Holy Toledo!
Yeah, absolutely, including the one and only Gino Cappelletti. And there's just so much to go through. You had to edit and re-edit.
Tom Brady could throw a ball through a Fruit Loop today.
That's, by the way, one of his best lines, I think. Could throw the ball through a Fruit Loop. That's pretty tough to do.
Thanks, babe.
You're welcome. You're very welcome, Gino. Don't you just love the drops? I mean, they're right on target, aren't they? Most of the time, anyway. So we were going through all of that today, and so I've got Patriots past on my brain. Pardon me for that, but it's just what I'm thinking here today. So anyway, that's what I'm going with. And if you've got some thoughts on the Hall of Fame, or you know, on the players inducted, or who you think might be, you know, next, that's fine. Fire them off. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address, as you know. Same email address as PFW in progress. Webradio@patriots.com. And again, the telephone number, if you'd like to give us a call, you can do so. 508-543-7482. Again, it's 508-543-7482. Brian Lowe from Patriots Today, and, of course, the Fantasy Lowdown. Will be joining us in the second hour of the program, as will Harvey Green, who is the, I guess his official title is what, Dan?
I believe it's Senior Director of Media Relations.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know they put a senior something on top. Harvey Green has been the longtime public relations guy for the Miami Dolphins. He's been a friend of this show. He's been a friend to a lot of people in the media for a number of years. And whenever the Patriots play the Miami Dolphins, he's always been kind enough to come on and speak with us about the game and about the Dolphins in particular. So Harvey Green is going to join us at what time?
2:30.
Perfect. So you got to like that. Thank you very much, Dan. There you go. Harvey Green from the Miami Dolphins will join us in approximately 25 minutes, and then Brian Lowe will join us in the 3 o'clock hour. Normally, and I say normally, there's really no normal to it, but just because that's the way we are around here. Tuesdays in the past, if you're familiar at all with the show, over the past several seasons, again, this is year 8 that we have done Patriots Playbook, as a part of the radio programming here on Patriots.com. Normally on Tuesdays we do something that I've called the last few years Nitpick Tuesday. Sure, it's been very, very difficult to nitpick or pick at nits or whatever you want to call it, simply because of the success. I mean, after all, when you've won 20, 21 regular season games in a row, you don't really have too many complaints, which is really why I think it kind of developed into Nitpick Tuesday, because we're all, you know, I guess, alleged football connoisseurs, and not only fans, but, you know, analysts. And we see, because we pay close attention to our team, we see teams and we see players and we see things, because we just pay closer attention to it, that maybe the average person doesn't look at. And so when you look back on the final product, the finished product, fact is this team won a game. They won 19-10. They won on the road. They won in the first game, AB, after Brady, so to speak. Matt Castle did what he had to do, played as well as he really needed to, managed the game effectively, if not efficiently, and probably both. And the team won, and that's really all you can ask for. Did they blow anybody's doors off? Well, no. And I realize that most people, you know, are used to the team doing that. That's not necessarily a bad thing. But I think we all realize, and I think this is one of the things that we have to realize at this stage, that we sort of have to take things in dribs and drabs here. This is a work in progress. This is a team that is basically gone back to, I don't want to say ground level zero here, but they've gone basically back to building themselves up again with a new floor, with a new field general, and they have to start somewhere in terms of trying to build chemistry amongst each other. And so this is really what we saw on Sunday afternoon at the Meadowlands, a different version, albeit similar, but a different version of the New England Patriots emerge. One that certainly, I would think, could have its emphasis put on defense. Not necessarily poor offense or even lesser offense than a year ago, but just different, because you've got a different person running the controls. So in this light, in this vein, in this quote-unquote Nitpick Tuesday mode, I have to look, you know, I usually sit most of the day on Monday and I listen to most of the Patriots Monday programming. And I try to decide what our tact is going to be, what our course of action is going to be for Tuesday, and maybe how we kind of start the week and what the theme should be. And I kept thinking, I really didn't have any preconceived notions. I thought that this team would win. I said that last week. I expected this team to win. I said that last week. I wasn't sure what the score would be. I didn't think it would be huge. I didn't think it would be a huge margin of victory. I think I called the score that I called was 20-13. At least I'm pretty sure that I called that one. I called it to somebody anyway last week, if it was you guys or not. And it ended up being 19-10, so obviously you're pleasantly surprised with that. I was, and I frankly had it expected. So I'm trying to think, all right, for Nitpick Tuesday, what do we nitpick about? What was there that could be improved? What was there that signaled to me we need to work here? And honestly, I didn't come up with much. It's one of the few times. I mean, last year when this team was steamrolling teams, beating the crud out of teams. We always manage to find some nitpicks on Tuesday. And if you listen to the program at all over the last couple of years, you know exactly what I'm talking about. We would go off on wild tangents. We'd get into some heated discussions even over, you know, what was a perceived slight and what wasn't. I'm having a hard time, gang. I'm having a real hard time with this. And maybe it's because my expectations overall were lessened somewhat. Not entirely let down altogether, but lessened somewhat because of Brady's absence. Am I wrong to think that? What did you see? I need some help with this, okay? Here's what I need some help with. So today's email question of the day for Patriots Playbook has to do with what you saw on the football field on Sunday. For those that did get a chance to see, though, if you did not get a chance to see the game or listen to the game or what have you, what I would ask you to do in this particular instance is, other than, you know, Matt Castle's continued improvement, perhaps, because I think we all realize that that's something that will have to happen for this team to have ultimate success this year. But what do you see as the greatest need for improvement on this football team right now? Right now. And for those that did see the game or did listen to the game, let's nitpick a little bit. Can you find an area of concern based on what you saw or listened to on Sunday afternoon? In other words, we're gonna pick some nits here. And the more I went by position by position, unit by unit, offensive line, tight end, quarterback, running back, defensive line, linebacker, cornerback, special team. I went through everything. Okay, everything. And I came up with just a couple of, it's almost silly, but it really backs up what I've said for the last, year, 2 years now since he's been a member of this football team. And my greatest nitpick, and it really doesn't even turn out, to be much of a nitpick because there's very good depth at the position. And the Patriots are fortunate that they have this depth. But my biggest nitpick, I think, overall from Sunday has to do with Lawrence Maroney. And I think many of you probably share the same concerns that I do and many others who cover the team share, and that just don't see him as a durable back. I don't see him as someone who is going to be, it's going to take some luck, I think, for him to be a 1,000-yard rusher in this league. The season's long enough where if he could stay healthy for, 12 to 14 games, then, he could probably rush for 1,000 yards. But right now, he can't do that. I'm not even sure what play he in particular got injured on when he went out in the first quarter on Sunday. And then, after getting the word to the broadcast folks that his return was questionable, which is usually what we get from team officials when someone goes down like that, return questionable, unless, of course, it's serious and his return is doubtful. He came back into the game in the fourth quarter and had one carry for what? Minus one, and that was it. Now, fortunately, the Patriots, I think, have extraordinary depth this year, and I'm pleasantly surprised with what I've seen from Lamont Jordan. I've always liked Sammy Morris. I've liked him even more since he became a member of the Patriots a year ago. Obviously, having the chest injury that he had a year ago was a major blow for him. But I thought the pickup of Sammy Morris was outstanding. We saw what Kevin Falk's presence really means to this team. He just diversifies that offense tremendously. There's just nobody on this team that can do what Kevin Falk does. He's a glue guy. Every team has to have glue guys. Every team has to have a guy that can do a little of this, a little of that, and hold everybody together by his mere presence and his actions. And Kevin Falk is that guy. Now, I don't necessarily think that he's a most valuable player. I think we realize who the MVP of this team is. But in that MVP's absence, in Brady's absence, Kevin Falk, I would certainly think that Kevin Falk would deserve at least to be front and center in terms of who the Patriots' real MVP is. I'm not talking about NFL MVP here. I'm talking about the MVP to this team right now. MVP to this team. And I saw enough from Kevin Falk offensively that without Kevin Falk, it changes dramatically the rhythm, the cadence, and I think the confidence of this Patriots team on offense. Kevin Falk, to me, is and most valuable patriot. He is. Now, short of that, Lamont Jordan, I thought, had an outstanding game against his old team. I'm trying to figure out why he fell into disfavor in Oakland, but then again, all you have to do is say two words, Al Davis, and you probably get an idea what the deal is here. You know, don't you know, here's a guy that is probably speaking, I'm going to get off the track here for a moment, but speaking of a guy who's just out of touch, here's a guy who's getting ready to fire his head coach in Lane Kiffin, and they just won. And he's probably pissed off that they won because he can't necessarily fire his coach. Now, I don't know. He may end up doing it while we're on the air here today. Who knows? Rumor is that he's out, and former Patriots coach Rob Ryan is in. But I don't know about you, but I sense something is amiss here. And with all due respect to Rob Ryan and Lane Kiffin and Mr. Davis, who's, you know, forgot more football than you or I will probably ever know in our entire lives, I don't think you want to try to under. I just don't think it's good. I just don't think it's a good idea to get into an organization and undercut the head coach like apparently is happening to Kiffin. It's one thing to suck up to your boss, which I think Rob Ryan is clearly doing here, but to do that at the expense of someone else, I just think it's kind of dirty and cheap. And if he really wants the head coaching job of the Raiders that bad, you know, if I'm Lane Kiffin, by all means, by God, go get it. I mean, I'm a young guy. Lane Kiffin is. You know, he's 30 what, 1? 32? He's young. He's got a great career ahead of him. He's got an unbelievable pedigree through his father, and he's not going to have a hard time getting a job at all. Rob Ryan, on the other hand, may have a very difficult job getting in, or a difficult time getting more jobs than the one he will apparently have if he's named head coach of the Raiders. He just sliced and diced his head coach. They're completely on different pages. They've basically all but torn each other up in the media. I think that's just a tremendous soap opera. Anyway, I know I've kind of digressed here, but fact is Lamont Jordan was the original intent here. How he fell in disfavor, their loss is easily the Patriots' gain. I feel better now about the running backs for the Patriots than I felt at any time last year. And, of course, last year we even argued whether or not they needed running backs. It really was. I mean, we nitpicked, I think, on Lawrence Maroney. He probably led our program in total number of nitpicks last year when we played Nitpick Tuesday. I'm guessing. But it just seems to me that we were always talking about Maroney this, Maroney that, the running backs this, the running backs that. I don't think we can nitpick on the running backs as much, although here I am picking on Maroney just because he just doesn't seem to be a durable back, and that's just, he is what he is. Good thing they have depth, because I don't think you'd feel like we were missing a tremendous amount if all of a sudden Lamont Jordan was handed the starting running back job. I don't think we'd be missing a lot if Sammy Morris was handed that job, or even if Kevin Faulk were handed that job. You know, you still got Heath Evans, and you just re-signed Kyle Eckel again. So the Patriots are in great shape in the backfield. And maybe this is all a byproduct of attempting to, you know, stack the deck a little bit and, you know, take some of the pressure off of Matt Cassel from having to do too much or having to put the team up on his shoulders, as we saw Tom Brady do many, many times. I just don't think that Lawrence Maroney is going to be a 1,000-yard rusher. If he is a 1,000-yard rusher, it means he's healthy for, like I said, at least 12 to 14 games and maybe a few more. Part of that could also be the fact that because they haven't had to rely on the run and because they have the depth in the backfield, that he may not get as many touches. That's certainly possible, but I would argue if he was given the opportunity for the touches, he wouldn't be healthy enough to get them all. I don't know. Is that a concern for you? It's just a nitpick on a Nitpick Tuesday. Webradio@patriots.com. So if you have a nitpick with this football team, something about this team that you're just not sold on, you're not set on, or something that you may have observed or heard or read about from this Sunday's game and the win over the Jets, now's the time to get it off your chest, and let's see if we can't discuss it a little bit. Webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number. All right, we'll give you a couple of moments, and then we'll start going through some of the emails. Some of the notes from Sunday's game, and these have probably been mentioned, but I think it bears repeating here just because of the significance, and I don't want anything to get lost in the translation, especially if it has not been mentioned over the course of the last couple of days. I think we all realize, especially on Patriots Monday and Friday, sometimes we digress from football, but that's just the nature of the beast. The Patriots did win their 21st consecutive regular season game. Yep, 21 consecutive in the regular season. They haven't lost since that game in December of 2006 when they lost at Miami, which was also, I'm sure you probably saw this stat on the television if you watched the game, it's also the last time the Patriots failed to score a touchdown in the first half of a football game like they did on Sunday when they led only 6-3 at halftime. I thought that was actually a pretty interesting stat. And when they showed that, and I think they first showed it right at the start of the second half of the game, and I'm thinking, oh, God, great timing for that one, huh? Well, hello, talk about a big jinx. Well, fortunately for the Patriots, they came out and they owned the third quarter. I think you're going to see more and more if the Patriots win the coin toss, they will defer to the start of the second half, you know, and take advantage of that rule being put into effect in the NFL this year. I think the Patriots and the coaching staff like having the opportunity to start anew in the second half and hold on to the ball and shove something down the other team's throats and seizing control. That will be part of a decision-making process, especially late in the first half of games. If you have the option to hold on to the football and take the kick in the second half, you're going to see more and more teams try to score and do it right before the end of the half and then come back and do it again to start the second half. That's a tremendous weapon if you know how to utilize it well. It takes good clock management and a good sense of where you are in the overall scheme of things. It takes a big picture guy on the field or in the press box to say, okay, we have this, we need this, this is what we want to do. I think that's going to be a piece of strategy that this team will continue to try to utilize to their advantage throughout the course of the season. Something that can help them as opposed to others. Now, that doesn't mean that other teams won't try to do this. They've got to. I mean, I think that, you know, I used to think that, well, why would you defer to the second half? That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Take the football right from the get-go. Take the football and set the tone, set the tempo, yada, yada, punch it down someone's throat and score. Well, when you realize that, I think part of it is because we're kind of spoiled around here. Last year, the Patriots scored on what? The first possession in all but like one game, I think, last year. And again, I don't have it in front of me, so I'm not sure. But we've been spoiled around here. So there are teams that utilize this strategy quite a bit. And the Patriots realize that we don't have the same team we had last year. So you're going to see them try to do a little bit more deep thinking rather than just, you know, pin your ears back and play. So don't be surprised if you see that. And the Patriots win the toss. Don't be surprised to see them not receive the ball to open up the game. Just a little bit of a side note here. The defense giving up 10 points to the Jets now means, of course, that they've given up 20 points through two games. The 20 points allowed through the season's first two games, the lowest total by a Patriots team since Coach Belichick became head coach in 2000. I don't know if you knew that or not. I didn't know that until I actually read that. The last time the Patriots allowed a total of 20 points or fewer in the season's first two games was back in 97. New England allowed a total of 13 points to start the year through the first 2 weeks. They won 41-7 over San Diego at Foxborough Stadium, and then they followed up with a 31-6 win at Indianapolis. Seems like forever ago, doesn't it? That was 11 years ago. So anyway, 20 points allowed through the first two games is the lowest number of points allowed since Bill Belichick became head coach. I thought that was significant enough to mention here. In addition to, of course, the 21 wins in the regular season overall. Steve Gostkowski had a great game. Hit all four of his field goals. Let's see here. The list says from 21, 37, 28, 27. Did everything he had to do. Did the job he was asked to do. And he performed it efficiently, if not outstandingly. He's now 5-for-5 in the season of field goals. 4-for-4 in the game, matched his performance against Houston on December the 17th of 06. Let's see, he has now hit 12 straight regular season field goals dating back to last season. He's also hit on 25 of his last 27 regular season kicks overall. That's 93%. He's successful 93% of the time in kicking field goals. Not even the, you know, Adam Vinatieri was able to do that. He's at 55 of 65 in his regular season and playoff career. 85%. And that accuracy rate is the highest in Patriots history. And this is our, what, 49th year of existence here. So some kudos where Steve Gostkowski is concerned, and the defense overall giving up just 20 points, and, of course, the entire team for now making it 21 straight regular season games. Question remains, of course, how long will that streak go? I heard somebody on a local radio program today say, you know, the first real test should come after the bye week when they go to San Diego. I don't disagree with that. San Diego, boy, speaking of, I mean, that team is snake bit, huh? The way that they've lost, the two games that they've lost at 0-2. Well, that's one thing you don't want to do when you go into a situation like that. You don't want to go into a game with a team that's snake bit and has its back against the wall. And, you know, I think Patriots fans should hope right now that San Diego finds a way to win a couple of games between now and the time the Patriots get out there. I mean, they're going to want to prove themselves against the Patriots anyway. The Patriots are the team that knocked them out of the Super Bowl last year. So I don't know that it means a heck of a lot in the overall scheme of things, but let's just face it. I mean, they will be rabid. They won't be quite as good on defense, but they will be rabid. I think they're also, time is going to tell, I think they're going to miss Michael Turner more than they really realize. They probably already do miss him somewhat since a guy like LaDainian Tomlinson was out with, what, his toe injury last week. So anyway, that's a couple of weeks ahead of the thing, but I see no reason why the Patriots can't continue to just motor on down the pike here, try to get a win this Sunday. Get your bye week in, then you go out on the road, you play San Francisco, and then you have San Diego. Right? Overall, no reason why it can't continue to roll a little bit and keep that 21 in a row and let it grow a little bit. So there you go. Let's get your thoughts. Webradio@patriots.com. Nitpick Tuesday here. Find an area in this football team right now that concerns you. And if there's not one, why are you so comfortable with things? Webradio@patriots.com. Let's take a timeout, and we'll have Harvey Green from the Miami Dolphins join us. And your emails right around the corner here inside the playbook.
Patriot Place, New England's first and only super regional lifestyle and entertainment center, is now open right next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. The home of the New England Patriots and the New England Revolution is now the home of New England's most exciting entertainment and shopping destination, featuring Circuit City, Bed Bath & Beyond, Christmas tree shops, Off-Broadway shoes, Staples, and New England's first Bass Pro Shops. Patriot Place has something for your shopping needs. And coming soon to Patriot Place is the first CBS Scene restaurant and bar, a four-star hotel, showcase live entertainment venue, and the long-awaited hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Patriot Place will soon be the home to more than 70 shopping, entertainment, and dining experiences unlike any other in New England. Visit patriot-place.com for more information and enter the grand opening sweepstakes for the opportunity to win a $10,000 Visa gift card for a Patriot Place shopping spree. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day. At Patriot Place, everyone wins.
This is former quarterback Steve Grogan
and former linebacker Steve Nelson.
We want to tell you about the game with the greats.
Are you one of those old diehard fans who remembers our playing days, like the 1985 Super Bowl or the snowplow kick?
Maybe you just want to meet the newest members of the Patriot Hall of Fame, like Ben Coates or my good friend Stanley Morgan.
And Andre Tippett, one of my linebacking brothers. He'll be there too.
You think he'll bring his gold jacket with him?
I hope so. I can't wait to see it on him.
If you're a big-time fan, you won't want to miss the Game with the Greats. It's happening on October 5th at Gillette Stadium when the current Patriots are away at San Francisco.
Get your tickets now at patriots.com/alumni.
Hey, that's pretty good, huh, Steve?
Yeah, we still got it. We should call ESPN. We could be the next Mike and Mike.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Miami. South Beach, bringing the heat. Can y'all feel that? Can y'all feel that?
Welcome back inside the playbook for a Tuesday. I'm John Rook. Web radio at patriots.com. 508-543-7482. On a Nitpick Tuesday, if you can come up with something that you might have seen or heard about or read about or listened to on Sunday that doesn't sit right with you, even though the team did win 19-10 over the Jets, it's time to nitpick on this Tuesday. And it's also time to nitpick, I guess, a little bit on the opposition for this next week. Of course, they stay within the division of the AFC East, and they will be entertaining the Miami Dolphins. And it's our pleasure to welcome back inside the playbook the Senior Vice President for Media Relations for Miami Dolphins, Harvey Green. Harvey, it's great to talk to you again. Thanks for spending some time with us.
John, happy to do it. I know people down here are really looking forward to the game on Sunday.
Why do you think that is? Maybe because the Dolphins are a better team this year?
Well, we think so. You know, first and foremost, it's a divisional game. Second, everyone here always views the Patriots as the gold standard in the league. You know, they are what we aspire to be. Certainly, you know, we're familiar with a lot of the players, you know, the Wes Welkers of the world. You know, a lot of the players are ex-Dolphins. So it's a good rivalry. It's one that, you know, we think if we can play well, can help put a little bit of a stamp on this team and give us some positive reinforcement that, in fact, the changes that we implemented during the offseason are indeed working.
Right. Well, let's talk about those changes, because this is not the same Miami team that most Patriots fans would have been familiar with a year ago or a couple years ago or maybe even 6 weeks ago. Let's start with someone who obviously we're familiar with around here, and Bill Parcells, and what, in your estimation, he has really meant to the overall immediate makeover of this team.
What I think he's done really is infused a winning attitude. I know that isn't necessarily transferable immediately to the on-field product, but I think people here have the faith and confidence that Coach Parcells, with the background he's had with a number of teams, will get things turned around here and do it relatively quickly. Obviously, when you're 1-15, there are some problems that you need to address, and he's come in, had a clear picture of what we have to accomplish, brought in the no-nonsense coach in Tony Sperano and the general manager in Jeff Ireland that all share a common vision. And I think that with Coach Parcells here, there's immediate credibility to some of the moves that all three of them have been making. And I think our fans entering at least our opening game were pretty excited about the changes we did make under the leadership of those three individuals.
Well, let's go from Parcells then to Tony Sperano as well, who you know, came in. Obviously, there was some familiarity between the two men from their time in Dallas as well. What kind of a change in attitude, if not, you know, mental, then certainly maybe even physical? What has he brought to this Miami team over what we saw a year ago?
Well, I think what Tony is a classic offensive line coach. I mean, he's hard-nosed. He's tough, doesn't take any excuses, kind of what you expect from an offensive line coach, has now morphed into a head coach. And I think that's real helpful, because obviously the last two games we have struggled, and it's something new to him because this is his first year as a head coach, but he's kept a positive attitude. He's doing everything he can to work through the mistakes we've made, keeping our team level, keeping it focused on this week's game. And I think, you know, for this point, with a team that basically is a young team, and as you mentioned, a big change in turnover from last year, he's the right person at the right time. He understands there are growing pains. He believes in teaching. He believes in patience. He believes in letting young people learn from their mistakes. And I think right now, given the makeup of our team, it's critical. I don't know that that necessarily would work in a different environment. I can't speak whether it would or it wouldn't, but it's certainly the right kind of attitude that works best for the team we have.
Harvey, you bring up a kind of an interesting question simply because, you know, we all know what the pressure is to win in this league, especially. There's pressure to win in everything you do in life, but in this league it seems to be magnified somewhat. So how does Coach Sparano, how does Coach Parcells, how do the Dolphins as an organization balance the need for immediate gratification, i.e. winning, with developing the younger players, as you talked about?
You know, that's a great question, because you not only have to win for your fans, you have to win for your own players. You know, as I mentioned, they need to see the positive reinforcement that the things they're being taught do in fact work. But I think because we brought so many of these players on board, we've picked a lot of them, we know the types of players they are, it's something that they're going to maintain that positive approach. Obviously, when we did make this turnover, we lost some key leaders like a Jason Taylor, like a Zach Thomas, but now it's going to be up to others to step in. And I think, for example, we have a perfect person in Chad Pennington to do just that.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons we acquired Chad is because of his leadership capabilities, and he's been through tough times. And so far, especially working with two young quarterbacks and a young receiving group, he's stayed very positive. He's worked hard. He's had extra meetings with them, looking at film, working out on the practice field to get them enthused, to make sure that we do correct those mistakes. And that's the type of leadership that a young team does need, and we're fortunate to get a guy like Chad. But again, that goes back to Coach Parcells, to Tony, and to Jeff to bring those types of individuals on board to begin with.
Harvey, you're making it way too easy to interview, because that's exactly where I was going with, because of the guys that you lost with Jason Taylor.
Usually that comes up pretty quickly in any interview.
Well, I understand that, and because those guys were such the focal point of your franchise, and certainly it goes back to, you know, some very good teams in the past. So in that regard, Pennington, I had to feel like when he was picked up, certainly it takes care of an immediate need because you wanted to upgrade the position, but overall my guess is that Pennington would have helped in other aspects. And how much was he picking up the duties that may have been vacated by guys like Jason Taylor and Zach Thomas?
Well, one good thing is he didn't have to work that hard to pick up the offense, which is first and foremost to get him on the field, because a lot of it he was familiar with, having played under Dan Henning when he was with the Jets, and Dan was a coordinator there. So some of the things when he came on board were already relatively familiar to him. But when you see his work ethic, he's here today, you know, after practice, he keeps the receivers out to work with him. He brings in the offensive linemen to look at film. He brings the wideouts in to look at film. When everyone looks at his work ethic as a veteran, you just can't help but want to follow that example. And that's exactly what Zach and Jason did, you know, the last decade. You know, they stayed here late. They were here early. When you added a guy, as you well know, like a Junior Seau, when, you know, he was with the Patriots, when you see the work that those people put in over and above what's asked and expected of them, when veterans, successful veterans, do that, then it just rubs off on everybody else. And I think that's what we have now in Chad, taking over a little bit from that role that Jason and Zach had, to give the team the type of leadership it needs, to show them what needs to be done over and above the 9 to 5 hours that every team puts in when they're at the complex.
Senior Vice President of Public Relations, Media Relations for the Miami Dolphins, Harvey Green, with us here inside the playbook. All right, you know, putting the good stuff aside here, the bottom line was a 31-10 loss to Arizona this past week, and I'm guessing that there are a lot of people that are greatly disappointed, not just with the score, but because maybe some of the improvements you kind of alluded to have not yet shown themselves or manifested themselves on the field yet.
No question about it. You know, we came off of a training camp pretty happy where we stood in terms of our development. We did get some playing time for our younger players. We felt we were getting some immediate help with some draft choices like Jake Long, Kendall Langford, a few others who were contributing. And so we were very happy with our development. But I think like any young team, you're going to make mistakes. We made some in the Jets game. Hopefully we corrected those. Honestly, we made others against the Cardinals. There were some breakdowns both defensively and in other areas where we had too many men on the field. And I think the first thing a young team has to learn, and this is what our coach talked about yesterday, is to make sure you don't beat yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have any mental errors. Don't jump off sides. Make sure you know if you're supposed to be on the field or not. Don't break down on your coverages. If you can eliminate those things, then you give yourself a chance. You know, some of the positives we took out of the game so far, in two games we've committed only one turnover. Well, usually that's a key to any team's success. If we can keep doing that and we cut down on some of the mental mistakes we made, then we probably give ourselves a chance to win every Sunday.
You know, I think that most Patriots fans around here, Harvey, certainly remember the days when it was Miami doing the other thing, doing what the Patriots have done recently to Miami. Fact is that Miami gave the Patriots their last loss in the regular season. How much does the past, whether it's good or bad, but how much does the past play a part in what this team, Miami-wise now, in what this team is trying to build for the present and the future?
I think it might have been a good barometer a few years ago when we had people who were with our team over a course of time, like the names I mentioned, you know, the Jason, the Jackson,
yeah.
You know, when Pat Surtain, Sam Madison, those people were here. But, you know, we have a whole new team now. Frankly, we're trying to change some of the culture of a year ago when we were 1-15. I don't think a lot of people here have been that familiar with success over the Patriots in recent years. Same thing with the Jets. You know, we haven't beaten them in a number of years, so some of the earlier dominance we had really didn't come into play. So I think you're dealing with some new players, very few familiar faces. Many have not been part of some of the good years we've had against the Patriots. So I think it's something where it's basically a clean slate, and we know how much we respect, you know, that team. You have the great record that they did a year ago, and you've got to understand how good they are.
Sure.
And I think really from everyone here, everyone's starting from a new beginning, which is our slogan, incidentally, because everything is so new, and that's positive. When you did struggle as much as we did last year, you want to look ahead and not back, and look at things you can do down the road, not things you might have done in the past.
Reclamation project of sorts, even though he didn't really turn out to be that, but it's turned out that he's kind of had to rehabilitate himself somewhat, as Ricky Williams and his story. How has he fit in this year, and how has he been, you know, in terms of just his day-to-day ability to come to work?
You know, I've been with Ricky ever since he joined this team.
Right.
I think it was 6 years ago, and if there's one thing that you do know about Ricky Williams, the minute he walks into the training facility, he is a pro. He does all the extra work, doesn't take a play off in practice, is great in meeting rooms, pays attention, is very coachable. Our coaches love him. And he does everything you would want in a professional football player and more. The only issue is, as you well know in the past, is things that might have occurred outside the building. He seems to be more mature, seems to be a lot more responsible in how he handles his responsibilities away from here. And so if you take those distractions out of play, which hopefully he has done in his life, then when he does come in here every day, he's been a model for certainly even our younger players like Ronnie Brown, who look up to his work ethic. So he's been fine. The only issues in the past have been things away from this building, and so far he's been able to distance himself from any of the things that have been issues in the past.
All right. Well, do you feel like overall, and I guess I know the answer to this question, but I still have to kind of ask it here, do you feel like overall that this team has more talent, better talent than what you've had in the last couple of years?
I don't know if it's better or worse. The one thing I can say is it's younger. And I think what we want to see is this team improve as the season goes along. You know, obviously, we did change the roster. We're really trying to work through the draft and not necessarily through trades or free agents to build this team. And I think there are a lot of new faces, a lot of young faces on this team. And honestly, they're going to have to learn by making mistakes. You know,
mm-hmm.
Chad Henne got a little bit of time in the fourth quarter, looked impressive, but I guarantee you the next time he enters the game, he's probably going to make some mistakes that any rookie quarterback might. So the key point for us is not whether we're going to be better or worse in comparison to past years, but how we're going to be as the season progresses. And the bottom line for us is certainly winning or losing, as it is for every team, but also progress. We want to make sure that we play our best football at the end of the year, that our players are gaining that experience, learning from their mistakes, than say we might be doing right now.
Yeah, I guess learn from the mistakes this last week with Kurt Warner, 361 yards against that secondary. So your youngsters in that secondary are going through a trial by fire right now as we speak.
And you know, honestly, it doesn't get any easier. You know, they've got Randy Moss and, you know, Wes Walker, and certainly here we all know what Wes can do. And it doesn't matter, you know, who's playing. You know, when you put that Patriot helmet on, you're symbolizing supremacy in the league, if not the AFC. So, you know, we know the task we have in front of us, and it's going to be a good way to really judge how far we've what kind of progress we've made this year.
Harvey, can you give fans maybe a little bit of insight as to a pleasant surprise on offense and defense for this team, someone that they might not have really been aware of?
Well, I'd say on offense, probably our wide receiver, Devon Bess, has looked good. He's a guy who has been really an unheralded player, undrafted. He's now sharing some return duties with Ted Ginn. He's been a real help for us in the receiving area. Unfortunately, one of our real surprises, Donald Thomas, who was an offensive lineman, got hurt the first game. He was a sixth-round pick who didn't see much time up in Connecticut. Some of your own listeners might be familiar with him, and really came out of nowhere to win a starting job, but unfortunately he injured himself and is now in IR. Defensively, I think Kendall Langford was a draft choice. He's starting at left end. He's gotten a couple of sacks in his first two games, so I think he's a kid that is going to just get better and better with playing time. So in one case, it's a draft choice who we had high expectations of. In another case, it's a free agent from Hawaii that we didn't have any and has really shown in training camp and preseason and when he's been given a chance in the regular season. And finally, although he's had his struggles, but I think he's played well on a consistent basis, the top pick in the draft last year, Jake Long, who gave up two key penalties that hurt us against the Jets. But I think our coach said out of the 66 plays that he took against the Jets, he won 60 of them, which is a great figure for any lineman, much less a rookie. So I think he's a kid that reminds me a little bit of Richmond Webb, who we took in the first round back in 1990, and I think it's just going to get better with the experience he gets each and every game.
I have to imagine, though, it makes the job that you have somewhat a little bit more difficult when your, you know, player that you're really trying to kind of mold around and build around isn't exactly a skill position player.
Well, yes and no. I mean, it's the same way up in New England. There's a lot of interest in this team. You know, we've been here for so many years. I've been associated with the team now for two decades. And there's so much interest in the Dolphins, just as there is in New England and the Patriots, that no matter who you are or what you do, people want to know about you, they want to read about you, they want to hear about you. And, you know, Jake Long is well-spoken, he's articulate, and he's done a great job representing this organization, as had all of our draft choices, Chad Henne during training camp. And because there is so much media attention, everyone here will get their chance to shine, so to speak. And I think it's great that, you know, part of the reason we drafted the people we did was because of character. You know, that's part of what we build our foundation on. And that shows from my regard in how they deal with the media. And these guys have been great. Obviously, we're going through some hard times now, but yesterday in the locker room, everyone was positive. Everyone was there to talk to the press. These guys know how to take responsibility, and hopefully as they grow, they'll continue to show that same type of maturity.
Any truth to the rumor that you guys are going to be known as Ann Arbor South?
Well, you know, our half owner also came from the University of Michigan. So,
I see. I didn't even know that. Oh,
no,
that's a good one.
Steve Ross is from Michigan. So, I was kidding Ted Ginn. He's getting a call, I think, from Keith Byers just to talk to him a little bit because he says a lot of Michigan guys around there. You know, we're going to take care of our whole state guys as well. So,
no kidding.
You know, but hopefully, I think everyone can coexist as long as they're wearing the same Dolphin colors.
Perfect, Harvey. Thanks so much for spending some time. We'll look forward to seeing you on Sunday.
That's great, John. I know we'll look forward to getting up there.
You got it. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
That's Harvey Green, who, of course, is the Senior Vice President for Media Relations for the Miami Dolphins, as he visits with us when the Pats and the Fins get ready to go at each other each and every year within the AFC East. I have to admit that I was stunned, completely stunned, when I saw the score of the Arizona-Miami game from this past Sunday. I mean, 31-10? I mean, is Arizona that good, or is Miami still really that bad? Which one was it in your estimation? Anybody see the game? Anybody read the excerpts from the game, other than what I've kind of read, here and there, and a couple of websites, and saw the, Miami Herald a little bit, and it's kind of hard sometimes to tell what really went on, simply because I think some of the coverage gets a little jaded after a while when you've lost, 21 out of 22, or whatever it is now that the Dolphins have lost. I was stunned. Probably a little bit of both, maybe. I think the Cardinals certainly are improved, yes. To the point where they could certainly be a serious playoff contender in the NFC. But are the Dolphins really still? I mean, wow. Pennington had only 112 yards passing. Ricky Williams, 11 carries for 28 yards. Ronnie Brown was 11 carries, 25 yards. So not much of a 1-2 punch at running back there. Although you'd have to say on paper, at least, having a healthy Williams and an attitude correct Williams with Ronnie Brown, if he's healthy, that's a pretty good 1-2 punch. You could make an argument that may be the single best 1-2 punch tailback-wise in the division, if not in the AFC. I mean, that's just looking at the names themselves. Greg Camarillo, 4 catches, not a whole lot of offense. Only put up 10 against, an Arizona team that, wow. Cardinals are the first, or what, now 2-0 for the first time, I think, since 91? Well, I guess the bottom line here is I'm not entirely certain what to take out of it from at least a Miami perspective from this past weekend. And we'll continue to jump into things about the Miami Dolphins throughout the course of the week here in the playbook. But there you go. You get at least a little bit of a taste of you know what the Patriots can be expecting. I mean, certainly they're familiar with Chad Pennington. And I know that in some corners of Miami media and fandom, a couple of message boards that are out there and such, that I guess there was some question as to whether or not Chad Pennington was going to stay the starter at quarterback from Miami based on his, shall we say, tepid beginning to his Dolphins career. Tony Sparano did say, I believe, yesterday that Pennington was going to stay his starter at quarterback. I think more specifically, though, the Dolphins need to worry about their secondary. This could be the game, kids. This could be the game that, you know, Matt Cassel gains a little more confidence. I mean, he certainly has reason to have confidence behind him now, given what the game plan was and what the Jets were presenting to him. And he managed the game. He did what he was supposed to. A lot of dinks, a lot of dunks, a lot of Wes Welker, some crossing patterns, things like that. Only went deep a couple of times. Missed on one. It happens. Frankly, I thought Moss should have caught the ball anyway, but that was just me. There you go. There's another nitpick for Tuesday right there. Randy Moss should have caught that freaking ball, you know? Okay. That's where we are with this team today. There's my nitpick. That's that and Lawrence Maroney. There's my nitpicks for today. You want a nitpick? There's a nitpick. Not saying much, is it? But this is a game I think that would just lead right into a progressive improvement for a guy like Matt Cassel. Because he's going to have a chance now to, I'm going to guess here and just say that he's going to have a chance to torch the Dolphins. He'll have a chance to go deep on occasion. Now, my guess would be that if they also, you know, roll the safety over, as Coach Belichick talked about yesterday, and you've probably seen in the media as well, and to provide double coverage on a guy like Moss, that's going to leave further opportunity underneath. And he'll take advantage of that. I'm guessing they try to go over the top a little more this week. And if they can do that, then that's exactly what the Patriots need. Just a little more elixir, a little more medicine for what ails them, if anything at all ails them on offense. All right, let's sneak in another timeout, and then we'll look at some emails. Brian Lowe. From Patriots Today and the Fantasy Lowdown will be joining us in hour number two of today's program. In the meantime, webradio@patriots.com, our email address, 508-543-7482. That's our phone number on a Nitpick Tuesday. What about Sunday's game could you find fault with? What about this team right now? Can you find fault with? This is a normal Tuesday thing. Is everything all hunky-dory in Patriots Nation? Are we all happy and pleased to be where we are? If we are, okay. If you are, then that's fine. I'm wagering that just is not the way it is with every single one. You, in particular, you. Come on now. I know you got a gripe. Let's hear it. We'll do that coming up inside the playbook.
Patriot Place, New England's first and only super regional lifestyle and entertainment center, is now open right next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. The home of the New England Patriots and the New England Revolution is now the home of New England's most exciting entertainment and shopping destination, featuring Circuit City, Bed Bath & Beyond, Christmas tree shops, off-Broadway shoes, Staples, and New England's first Bass Pro Shops. Patriot Place has something for your shopping needs. And coming soon to Patriot Place is the first CBS Scene restaurant and bar, a four-star hotel, showcase live entertainment venue, and the long-awaited hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Patriot Place will soon be the home to more than 70 shopping, entertainment, and dining experiences unlike any other in New England. Visit patriot-place.com for more information and enter the grand opening sweepstakes for the opportunity to win a $10,000 Visa gift card for a Patriot Place shopping spree. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day. At Patriot Place, everyone wins.
This is former quarterback Steve Grogan.
And former linebacker Steve Nelson.
We want to tell you about the game with the greats.
Are you one of those old diehard fans who remembers our playing days like the 1985 Super Bowl or the snowplow kick.
Maybe you just want to meet the newest members of the Patriot Hall of Fame, like Ben Coates or my good friend Stanley Morgan.
And Andre Tippett, one of my linebacking brothers. He'll be there too.
You think he'll bring his gold jacket with him?
I hope so. I can't wait to see it on him.
If you're a big-time fan, you won't want to miss the Game with the Greats. It's happening on October 5th at Gillette Stadium when the current Patriots are away at San Francisco.
Get your tickets now at patriots.com/alumni.
Hey, that's pretty good, huh, Steve?
Yeah, we still got it. We should call ESPN. We could be the next Mike and Mike.
When you've got a lineman-sized hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Welcome back inside Patriots Playbook on a nitpick Tuesday here on Patriots.com Radio. My name is John Rook. Not much to pick nits about today, to be quite honest with you, but we're going to press onward and upward anyway where that's concerned. I got some emails here that look like they've been around since the tail end of last week when we left you on Thursday afternoon. And so forgive me if these have been used, but I don't think they have been. So let me see if I... I'm trying to go through some of this. Looks like there are some people here that have actually misunderstood questions in particular. So, but that's all right. You know, everybody likes to dig here from time to time. Let's see if I got a couple here for you. My apologies here. This one comes from Michelle, who says, can you be as kind to answer my question, and that is, when is Tom having his surgery, and why are they waiting a month? Is it mandatory, and for the team's morale, I guess she means, will he be on the sidelines throughout the season? Well, let's see, Michelle. First of all, there is no definitive date on when Brady is having his surgery. That is a medical decision that the team will make, the team's doctors will make. Traditionally, I don't know if you're familiar at all with what happens when a player injures his knee and has an ACL tear and an MCL tear for that matter, which is what he's got. But what happens is there's usually a lot of swelling. I know this because it's happened to me about 25 years ago. There's a lot of swelling, so they have to wait for the swelling and the inflammation to go down, because right now it wouldn't do much good to get inside the knee and open it up. You wouldn't be sure what you were trying to fix. When everything gets back to like semi-normal, with the exception of the ligaments themselves that have been torn, when all the swelling goes down, then the ligaments are easier to find and easier to reattach and easier to repair. So it will probably be approximately a month from now. Or actually, I was told last week, 4 to 6 weeks from the date of the injury when he'll actually undergo surgery. And then after that, it will be approximately 6 to 9 months of rehabilitation. Now, if he works really hard and he's very diligent, it could be on the shorter side of that. If it happens to be a particularly excruciating experience and maybe more damage, or the surgery doesn't go as well as you hope, it could be on the longer side of that. Remember a couple of years ago, Michelle, and anybody else for that matter, when Rodney Harrison blew his knee out, just exploded it, tore all three of the major ligaments. There were some questions whether or not he'd even be able to walk normally again, much less play again. And it took Rodney pretty much 9 to 12 months. And he's just now kind of like, you know, feeling his oats again. In the past, Carson Palmer, here's a better example. Carson Palmer, quarterback for the Cincinnati Bengals, when he blew out his knee a couple of years ago, and he came back after roughly 9 months of rehab. He still was not quite the same as first year back. It usually takes you, and I don't mean to just, you know, blow the circuit on next year. But when you have a devastating knee injury like the one that Tom Brady has had, it takes you a while to get it back. You can rehab it to where the point becomes where you don't really hurt it as much anymore, but you still missed a little bit of that zip. And, of course, there'll be some that would say, well, Tom never had a zip in his step. But it's going to take him a little while. It's not to say that next year won't be or can't be a good year. I'm going to think that it probably will be 2 years from right now before we get back to seeing the Tom Brady of, shall we say, old. That's just a guess on my part. It will take all of the rest of this year and all of early part of 09 for him to rehab. But if things go according to schedule, he should be able, with no further complications or no further injury or no further problems, he should be able, if everything goes well again, and again, you know, I am saying it, and I don't know because I'm not going to go through the rehab with him. But he, you know, in theory, based on past injuries that are similar, he in theory would be able to be ready for next year's training camp, somewhere around that time. Now, even so, we know how the Patriots treat training camp in the preseason, right? You know, I don't know if that would change at all. Would they continue to protect him and not let him play, or would they let him, you know, get some reps next year, you know, because he's got a year's worth of rust to knock off? I mean, who knows? And we'll deal with that all next year because we still got an entire year to play here. But that will be something that will be talked about a lot next year. And my guess would be it'll take him all of next season, and if he doesn't have any further problems, then by 2010, we'll come closer to seeing the Tom Brady that we've seen the last couple of years. That would be my guess. I heard somebody say the other day, in fact, well, geez, he's going to miss the whole year, so that ought to give him at least a year of shelf life for his career. And in kind of a sick way, it's kind of like, well, he'll be able to last that much longer. He's not going to play this year. He's not going to undergo the wear and tear this year. He's not going to get beat up. You know, actually, I think there's some truth to that. He's not going to take the pounding. Now, he was hit, what, 80, 85 times last year, even though he wasn't sacked that many times, but he was hit. He took as much pounding as any quarterback in the league. And he will save a year of wear and tear, that's for sure. I don't know if that will add a year to his career or not, but it's kind of interesting to hear somebody actually say that and what the perception might be, even though perception isn't always reality here. So, and as far as him being on the sidelines, I think it's possible that at some point he could be. But, you know, when you're rehabbing and you're on the sidelines and you're wearing a brace and you're on crutches, you're not really mobile. I don't think he'll be front and center on the sideline to have happen to him what Charlie Weiss had happened to him the Notre Dame game last week. Did you see that against Michigan? Did you see Charlie get, you know, decked by his own player?
And, oh, my arm! It's broken!
No, he did more than just that. He tore his knee, and he's got an ACL tear. And I believe an MCL tear as well, even though he said he's not in any hurry to have it repaired because he doesn't have to go out and play. But, I mean, that's why you won't see him front and center on the sideline. You might see him back in the bench area. I guess that's possible. But, I mean, when you're on the sideline, you're subject to, you know, the physicality of the game. And he won't have equipment on. I don't know that you'll see him on the sidelines. You might. I kind of doubt it. I think that Tom will probably be out of the way during the games, and his help will probably come on the practice field and in the classroom here in the stadium. I think that's where you'll see Tom help the most. I hope that kind of answers your question a little bit there anyway, Michelle. All right, let's go back to this one. This one comes from Joe. Says, when Castle threw the bomb to Moss, he didn't step up to throw it. He underthrew it. Do you think he's afraid that what happened to Brady would happen to him, or do you think this is something to worry about? No. No, I think he just, I believe the ball just slipped. Did it get tipped? I'm not sure. I don't think so. I thought maybe initially that it gotten tipped. I think the ball just slipped out of his hands, which is why he underthrew it more than anything else. And then, of course, we saw, and it was an audible on the player. It was a change because that was not the original intent of the play. And then all of a sudden you see Randy Moss throw his hands open because he was absolutely whipped the cornerback on the play. And it may just have been a case of being too eager to get the ball out there to him. The ball just slipped out of his hands. Possible. Do I think that he was worried about what happened to Brady, what happened to him? Not in the least. No way. Players don't think like that, Joe. Players don't say, oh, my God, if I do that, I could get hurt like Brady. No. Nobody ever thinks like that. Nobody thinks they're going to go into it getting hurt. Nobody does. Not in any sport, no athlete, nowhere. I defy you to find me an athlete, a professional athlete, worth, you know, two sacks of beans that goes out there thinking, oh, I got to avoid doing that because I'll get hurt. Nobody thinks like that. You can't afford to do that. If you think about getting hurt, you'll get hurt. It's that simple. Okay, let's see. I can only listen to this. Hey, guys, someone is dropping the ball here. I can only listen to the show on my iPod. Last week I went to listen to the show after the Brady injury, but it wasn't posted on iTunes. Luckily, there was a Patriots Hall of Fame propaganda show. That was, must have been Brian's show, right? Which, of course, will follow this one today. Let's see. I could avoid all the football talk in favor of detailed descriptions of the new building instead. I got the Wednesday show where Mike shed tears over the indignity Yankees players have suffered from Jeter swallow shirts. He's offended by that humor. Has he ever listened to PFW in progress? Okay. No show on Thursday again. That's Anthony at the University of Maine. Sorry, Anthony. I don't know what to tell you. You probably, if you're only getting the show on your iPod, then, I mean, have you downloaded an updated either Windows Media Player or an updated Real Player? I think if you have the latest versions of either one, and if it's your own personal computer and you don't have any firewalls, you should be able to get the live version. But we're happy you listen to the podcast anyway, so thank you for that. Okay. Let's see. Let's move on. Again, webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482 on a Nitpick Tuesday here inside Patriots Playbook. Oh, goodness. Here we go. Christian says, the defense was solid and offense was methodical at times. How good is Kevin Faulk? He just continues to make plays. Yeah, I talked a little bit about that earlier, Christian. And in my estimation, Kevin Faulk right now is the MVP of that team's offense, of the Patriots offense. I saw a spark on that team offensively that you just don't get the chance to see. You didn't see the week that when he had to sit out, you didn't see that. Faulk adds such a dimension to the offense from his ability to catch the ball, his ability to run the ball. He's a money player. He's just absolute money. And I think Kevin Faulk is got to be considered one of the, if not the most valuable player on that offense right now, based on every tool that he brings to the table. He also says, Lamont Jordan seems like another good Bill Belichick, Scott Pioli training camp pickup. Welker looked like his old self. I still think that in order to beat teams like Denver, San Diego, and Indy, we need to put up touchdowns, not field goals. I'm not going to disagree with that. But I would tell you that at least they're putting up something right now. And let's give this particular offensive unit a chance to gel together and give everybody on that unit from, you know, Kevin Faulk to Randy Moss to Lamont Jordan to Wes Walker to everyone, including the offensive line. Let's give everybody a chance to, you know, get used to having Matt Cassel as their quarterback. And when that happens, and I think you'll see, hopefully, some progression throughout the course of the season, then those field goals will turn to touchdowns. He says, hopefully Cassel can use some of these couple of games and the bye to get into more of a rhythm with the receivers. No doubt about that at all. And at that point, and at that notion, we bring in Brian Lowe. What's up, B-Lowe?
Not too much, John. How you doing?
Do you think do you agree or disagree with that particular assessment where, you know, obviously, this team is still, it's going to offensively going to be continue to be a work in progress. But as long as you see some progression in some areas week to week, that they're stepping in the right direction?
Yeah, 19 points won't be enough every week. I think we know that. I mean, it'll be enough some weeks. There'll be some weeks where they score 10 or 14.
It won't be enough against San Diego in a few weeks.
It won't be based on San Diego's first few weeks. Right. No, but, you know, San Diego's defense so far has proven to be, you know, able to be scored upon. We'll see. That's still a few ways off.
Right.
I think what we're going to see is some different guys each week being the key performers. You know, we saw Lamont Jordan have an excellent performance in the second half of the game on Sunday. I think one of these weeks, David Thomas is going to have a breakout game. I think we're going to see Jabbar Gaffney open up sometime soon. We're probably not going to see those games where the entire offense is operating on all cylinders for 60 minutes like we saw a few times last year. It's going to be up to different guys, different weeks. Matt Cassel is going to have his ups. He's going to have his downs. The running game is going to have their ups, going to have their downs. I think they have enough of a diversified offense that they can withstand, you know, one element of the offense having a down week if others step up.
Right.
And, you know, I think, you know, certainly the offensive line rounding into shape will be important. And, you know, maybe they get Stephen Neal back at a certain point. And, you know that Russ Hochstein is going to play a role. control at some point. You hope the offensive line can be stabilized and keep keep sackers off of Castle. But hey, this was a good stepping stone type of game for the offense and for Castle, which is exactly what he said. Wasn't great, wasn't perfect. They didn't need to be great. They didn't need to be perfect on this day. They'll need better performances at certain times, San Diego being one of those. Maybe Denver, which is the week after San Diego.
Right.
There will be some weeks where the offense is going to need to score more than 19 points. But, a step in the right direction, I guess.
Absolutely. And that's pretty much where we've kind of come to that conclusion here, because through the lack of email nitpicks today on a Nitpick Tuesday, I think everybody was fairly satisfied, if not out and out pleased over what they saw.
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, it was hard not to lower expectations going into this week, right or wrong. I mean, you sort of reset your entire sphere of expectations for this team a week ago. And you take that into account when you start thinking. I mean, we if you look at the odds, what Vegas had to say about this game from between last Sunday and the actual day of the game, I mean, it completely was reversed from a 10-point favorites for the Patriots to what, 10-point underdogs? You had to completely change and start with a clean slate. And I think people understand that. And I think, you know, if Matt Castle completely laid an egg in this game, there'd be reason to worry. But his performance was eerily similar to Tom Brady in September of 2001 in his first game. The stats were virtually identical, and the score was far more lopsided, but that was because, you know, the defense and the special teams, I think, both scored in that game against Indy.
Right.
So when you think about it that way, hey, there's plenty of room for improvement, but you just had to reset your expectations going into this game. So that's probably why, you know, I would assume that's why not too many people are nitpicking. You really shouldn't. You got to give this guy a little more of a chance. You got to give this current team a little more of a chance.
Pete in Augusta, Maine says, I think the season rests on the O-line. The defense seemed to step it up. Looks like Bill is gearing up the run game. Pats still have a lot of talent. Think they can go a long way. Super Bowl, maybe with some luck involved. Go Castle. I think that's way ahead of ourselves. But at the same time, though, yes, they still have a lot of talent. Yes, they are gearing up the running game. And yes, I open up the show with saying I think Lamont and Jordan may be the pickup of the offseason.
Yeah, and, you know, this team has in the past had some guys. You know, my rule of thumb when a guy is available once training camp starts and he's a free agent, there's got to be a reason why the guy's available. In this case, it's kind of similar, even though this is earlier, this was before the season, it's kind of similar to when, like, you know, Heath Evans came in the middle of the season and was able to play an immediate role, and you're like, wow, why was this guy not on a team? Why was this guy available? How about Jabbar Gaffney? You know, he was available, you know, off the scrap heap. Well, you know, this guy's pretty good. How was he not available? And sometimes it's just a matter of finding your niche on a certain team. I had my doubts when Lamont Jordan signed, and my thinking was at the time, back in late July, I was thinking, well, for this guy to make the team, either Sammy Morris is going to have to get injured or not make the team, or, you know, Heath Evans, something would have to happen to him. I just didn't see them keeping five running backs, especially, you know, I just didn't see the role for him. I thought he'd have to really outplay other guys. And then you start seeing him, and you saw some of his performances in the preseason games. You're like, this guy's not bad. This guy can play a role. You're not going to need Lamont Jordan to be 20 carries a game. But it, you know, in this particular case was a good example. Lawrence Maroney leaves the game with an injury. He ends up coming back to the sideline. I think he made an appearance later on. But, you know, if Lawrence Maroney leaves the game and you're completely relying on Sammy Morris, well, you know, maybe Sammy Morris can only take you so far. If Maroney leaves the game and you got Morris and you've got Lamont Jordan there and you can mix them up a little bit, maybe one game it's Jordan getting 17 carries for 60 yards. Maybe Sammy Morris has a better game some other time. You've just got such a diverse array of weapons. Now, Lamont Jordan came around well before Tom Brady got hurt. So, you know, they had five usable running backs on the roster week one, although Kevin Falk was suspended, but they had five guys.
Their plan was still to beef up the running game regardless. I mean, this is well before they knew Tom was going down.
They wanted to have five. So I think they figured, hey, you know what? We need to make sure we're balanced and not just be balanced, but within that running back group have a lot of diversity and ability to do a lot of different things. As of right now, they actually have six running backs on the roster because they signed Kyle Eckel yesterday.
Right.
And you know, as in exchange for a tight end. So they've got six running backs on the roster, and they really only have one healthy tight end, although Benjamin Watson does seem to be coming, you know, maybe he'll be back this week. And, you know, as far as wide receivers, really only two wide receivers that have really done much so far through two games, Randy Moss and Wes Welker. Gaffney hasn't done much. Kelly Washington hasn't done much. We haven't seen Sam Aiken out there. A lot of signs pointing to this team is going to rely on this running back group more so than in past years and more so than we would have thought coming into the year.
That was actually part of my nitpick for Tuesday. Yeah. I was going to nitpick on one of our favorite targets from last season, Lawrence Maroney.
Yeah.
The fact is that I just don't think he'll ever be the 1,000-yard rusher that people think he's capable of being, because
yeah.
I just don't think he's durable enough, which is part of the reason why I believe this team stepped up and built up the depth at running back in this offseason.
And you would hope, I mean, listen, when you draft a guy in the first round at whatever position, you're figuring he's going to be a cornerstone or the cornerstone at that position for 10 years. Otherwise, 10 years is a stretch. That's why you pick a guy in the first round.
I think that's reasonable. I think it's reasonable.
That's why you take a guy in the first round. You don't take a guy in the first round because he's going to be Alex Smith or he's going to be out of the league in 3 years. You take a guy because you can say, you know what, we're set at that position for a while. That's not the case with Maroney. Now, 2006 was kind of the start of really the NFL trend of you got to have two usable running backs to survive. You got to keep guys fresh and all that. And they still had Corey Dillon, and it worked out well that rookie year. Maroney showed flashes. It was still Dillon was still in the leading role, but they kind of, essentially split carries when it was all said and done by the end of the season. The question right now has to be, can you rely on Lawrence Maroney to be one of your two reliable running backs? We know here, the way it looks here, based on their philosophy to have, several running backs and based on his durability, it's not going to be here that he's a 24-carry-a-guy, 1,200-yard rushing type of guy. It's not going to happen here. And you either have to understand that and say, okay, as long as we have him, as long as we can rely on him to be in the mix, then we're fine. It's just that he's a first-round pick, and you think it's got to be otherwise. And he's shown enough in flashes, especially the end of last year, that, well, wait a minute, if we do give him the ball and he stays healthy, he will rush for 1,500 yards. I don't know if that's going to be the case here.
I don't know that they even intended that to be the case. My guess is that they were hoping for something, realizing they're not getting it, and so, well, I think we need to make sure that we protect ourselves in this particular fashion. I think what should be more of a target number for fans, generally I think fans and most casual football observers, and even some serious football observers, that matter. But let's just say that they look at individual numbers and think, oh, well, if a back runs for 1,000 yards, then that team had at least a decent running game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a bit of a misconception. While it certainly indicates that there is some talent there, I don't think that necessarily means there's a great running game involved. You could have one guy with 1,000 yards and then nobody else have anything, and you can have a terrible running game when you average that over 16 games. What may mean is one guy's incredibly durable. What I think the number is that most fans of the Patriots need to look at is the per game number.
Mm-hmm.
This team needs to hit about 125 rushing per game.
Yeah.
And if they can hit 125 rushing per game, then you know that they're pretty much accomplishing, at least at a minimum, what they feel like they need to do to have a chance to be successful.
Right. And if that comes with five different guys having 25 yards,
then that's what it comes with. That's exactly right.
If Maroney rushes for 125 and everybody else combines for a goose egg, hey, that's what it took on that day. That's fine. You also, obviously, you want the yards per carry to be important. But what this team really looks at, I think, is, the ability to move the clock at the right time. Like in this game, when they're ahead in the fourth quarter, it's let's move the clock. And you're going to move the clock with the running game. And, Lamont Jordan, 9 yards, 3 yards, 1 yard. You move the clock, and it depends on where those yards come from, I guess, as well. What time of the game and what part of the game they come in. But you're right. I'd say that's a rough estimate. And if by the end of the season it's three different guys with 600 yards rushing,
then that's pretty good.
That's not bad. That's fine.
You wouldn't have any complaints,
I don't think. And you're absolutely right. I bet if we look at the history of, 12, 13, 1,400-yard guys,
But the perception would still be out there that the Patriots' running game suffers by comparison because they don't have one back as the ball hog, if you will.
Right.
And that doesn't necessarily have to be the case. And you hear, well, running back by committee, isn't that sort of like quarterback by committee, and it doesn't work? Running back is a different species.
Well, every position is different from quarterback. You could have multiple wide receivers, tight ends, running backs in the mix. You can't compare it to quarterback. There's only one on the field at one time.
Right.
But at running back,
unless you're in five wide, there's more than usually one running back on the field.
Right,
usually.
And if it's not, you're not going to switch quarterbacks every play. You can switch running backs every play and keep guys fresh. And if they're performing, that's all the better. I mean, you've got multiple guys performing. That's great. And what the Patriots have right now is different. Is guys whose their strengths are different elements of the running game, I think, as well. You got Kevin Faulk, and we know what he's done. And I know know you were talking about him earlier, in the third down and catching the ball out of the backfield, which is almost like a running play. I mean, a little screen passes or whatever, where, you know, it's essentially a running play. And you've got, you know, Maroney who can cut to the outside. You got Jordan who's going to, you know, go up the gut, up the middle. Yeah, you got different guys who can do different things. You get Heath Evans who, you know, every now and then on a fourth and inches, you know, at midfield, you're gonna see him with the ball in his hands, and he's done a really good job while he's been here as a lead blocker for some of these guys. So you've got guys who you can rely on in different types of situations. It's a diverse group, and I think going forward, even if Tom Brady was the quarterback right now, I think we were going to see more of an emphasis on seeing these guys and seeing what they can do.
By the way, you're talking about Falk. He had four more receptions. He has 327 in his career now. He is the Patriots' all-time leader in receptions by a running back. He needs two more to tie Terry Glenn for fifth all-time in franchise history. That's amazing, especially for a running back. It also tells you how valuable, as I've been talking about today, how valuable he really is to this offense.
You know, it's amazing for a guy to last as long as he has, 10 years. He was what, a third round pick in 99. It was third out of LSU, and he set records at LSU. It wasn't like this guy was an unknown quantity. And you know, in his first couple years, I mean,
second round 99.
And in his first couple years, I mean, this wasn't a very good team, and they didn't really have much of a running game. And you know, he started to show flashes, you know, early on. And but you know, you got the sense that okay, I mean, he'll be here for a couple years, and then you know they'll end up upgrading or whatever. And but for a guy like him to find his niche the way he has, starting in those Super Bowl years with, you know, being that reliable third down guy, on occasion being a lead back, there have been times over the years where for injuries or injury reasons or whatever, he's your number one back going into a game, and he can succeed. Has he had fumble issues in the past? Sure. You know, is he the perfect running back? No, but what a complimentary guy.
He's been perfect for his role.
Right. And to be fifth, or soon to be maybe fourth, all time in this organization in receptions.
It's a credit to his longevity and to his ability to adapt and to his willingness to accept his role.
Yeah, and that's what it is. And that's why he became captain, or why he was a captain last year, too, is you just get to a certain point in your career where maybe you know, early on you would have thought, you know what, I got to get out of here because I can be the lead guy.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to be the number one guy somewhere else. But
right.
But you buy in and you realize how valuable you are and your role is to the team and to the team effort. And you get to a certain point in your career where you're like, this is where it's at for me is being a part of something bigger than just me. And he's settled into that role. And you know, you see week in, week out how valuable he can be. And even in the punt returns. He had a strong performance Sunday. He can still play in the return.
That's why I mentioned earlier, you know, when he's out on the field, this team seems to have a spark about it that they just don't have when he's missing.
Yeah, yeah, and he proves it in many different ways. He's a good guy to have in your team.
By the way, he's second in terms of longevity on this team behind whom?
Teddy Bruschi.
That'd be correct.
I earlier this offseason, because I'm, you know, partly because I do work here and work, you know, in sports.
You do?
And partly
you do everything.
Yeah, and partly because I'm kind of a sports geek or sports loser or whatever, I decided one day, and this was during work time. It wasn't during my own personal time. It was during work time. I decided to see who the longest tenured athletes are in Boston. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of interesting. It just popped into my head, and I don't have it in front of me. But to see who some of the longest tenured guys are, you know, not just here, but in the entire Boston sports landscape. And you know, once I put it to paper, I'm like, Lonnie Paxton is one of the six or eight longest tenured athletes in Boston right now. Lonnie Paxton.
Wow.
He started in 2000. Guys who are in the Boston area. And on the Boston sports teams who were around since before 2000, we're talking about a select few. Tim Wakefield, Jason Varitek from the Red Sox, Bruschi from here, Bruschi and Falk from here, Paul Pierce with the Celtics. I think there was maybe P.J. Axelson from the Bruins. And then you had the guys from 2000, Brady and Lonnie Paxton.
Wow.
He's one of the top eight longest ten. And I was like, wow, this is unbelievable. And Falk is one of the three or four long. I mean, other than Falk, it's Bruschi. It's Tim Wakefield and I think Jason Varitek and Paul Pierce.
I
think that's about it.
Yeah.
That's about it.
That's right.
So Falk has been here. You know, it's hard to believe. I mean, it really is. But you know, he's been here just about as long as you could be. And in this day and age, you know, guys don't stay with one team for too long, especially, you know, it's one thing. You know, you get superstars that are with a team like up until this year, Brett Favre. I mean, superstars who are with their team forever. A role player who you know, kind of a niche guy to be around for 10 years is pretty impressive.
I agree with that. Yeah. James in Roanoke Rapids says, while I was watching the game Sunday, I heard the announcer comment on the Patriots' defense. He said, I've heard that the Patriots' defense was getting old and slow, but I don't see any signs of that here. Do you contribute the great game of the defense to them stepping it up or to the lack of quality competition?
I personally think that, well, the Jets were sort of disappointing offensively to me.
Right.
I thought they'd have more than they offered in this particular game. But, I make no mistake about it. In my opinion, the defense is taking it upon themselves to decide, hey, you know what? The offense isn't what it's going to be last year. And we're a good defense. We still have a lot of our core guys from previous years. They're taking it upon themselves to say, hey, don't forget about us. We this defense was the cornerstone of this team, back in 01, 03, 04. You know, this is the team that was, that was all about the big defensive performances. I don't think it's a coincidence that this game was where we really saw a spark out of Rodney, out of Richard Seymour, Teddy Bruschi had a big game, Ty Warren. And not that they didn't have big performances last year or even last week against Kansas City. I just don't think it's a coincidence that in this first game post-Brady, this was a defensive game. This was a game where the standout performances, the memorable performances, memorable plays were defensive plays. I think it's more about them stepping up than it was about the opponent on this week. And I think we're going to see that all throughout the year.
One thing that I've noticed about this team stepping it up is obviously we've seen in the first couple of games the red zone defense. Mm. It certainly picked up where it kind of left off last year. Patriots held the Jets to a field goal after New York had a first and goal at the 3-yard line in the second quarter. On first down, it was Bruschi and Sanders stuffing Thomas Jones. Second down, Harrison got Jones for a 1-yard game. Third and goal, Seymour stuffed Jones and forced a field goal there to keep the Pats up 6-3. So we saw that last week. We saw one the opening week as well, against Kansas City late in the game that certainly had the game riding on the outcome. That to me is a huge positive to see this team emphasizing that at this early stage of the season.
Bend but don't break. Isn't that what we've seen and what we've said in the past? I mean,
first 2 weeks.
They gave up a couple of plays, fluky. They were a little fluky, but the play was a Coles that took it. Took it
Coles.
All the way.
Yeah,
yeah I forget exactly when that was. I think that was in that second quarter drive. 54 yards. It was a short pass and some missed tackles. They've got a few holes on this defense and they've given up some pretty big yardage plays, but they're getting it done when it counts the most. And even you just went play by play on that second drive, that first drive in the first quarter when Jay Feely missed the field goal. It was the same kind of thing. They got into the red zone. It wasn't goal line, but they got into the red zone. It was a third down completion to Leon Washington.
Right.
They get in the red zone and Ty Warren stuffs Thomas Jones for after 2 yards, an incomplete pass, and then Favre scrambles and gets taken down. They have to settle for a field goal attempt and they miss. It's a little bit of that bend but don't break style. I think there are some holes on this defense, and a few guys have lost a step. There's no doubt about it. But if they can come up where it matters the most and where they take the most pride, which is down there, inside the red zone, inside the 10, at the goal line, that's what it's all about. That's what they take the most pride in. And it was funny last year how they'd finish off some of these games, 42-7 and 38-0 and all that, and you're trying to. You're trying to find out well where can they improve and all that, and the defense kept on saying we're one of the worst teams in the red zone. And statistically they were right, but it's one thing if you allow teams to reach the red zone twice in an entire game and they score twice versus if you let them get there 8 times and they only score 4. They didn't let teams in the red zone all that much. When they did, they scored a few times. It was already 21-0, so no big deal. But that was what they weren't happy with their red zone performance last year, even though they were winning these games by hundreds, and teams would score a few times in the red zone. Now that the scores are probably going
to
be a little closer than they were last year, they have to, and those red zone stops are going to be magnified.
Absolutely.
They are going to be magnified.
All right, John sends an email. He goes, hi, John, forgive me for starting off by referring to Merriweather's pick. He wrote in the subject line, look, Ma, hands. I know that was a big criticism on Brandon Merriweather last year that he just didn't have the hands to play, and he obviously found himself with a big pick.
Well, yeah, and if he couldn't reel in this one, then I don't know.
If he had dropped that, it'd been all over.
Play the game with the hands tied behind your back. I don't know if you couldn't reel in this one.
Absolutely. Says, it wasn't pretty, but it worked. When I told people last week that we'd win by 10, they all looked at me like I was nuts. Well, we won by 9. And here's what I took from the game. I thought they reeled Castle in, which we kind of expected, limiting his throws and he can prove himself a bit more reliable. I would say that that wasn't necessarily the case, although I think they probably realized that we don't want to give him anything that might lead to, shall we say, higher risk. But as Coach Belichick explained yesterday, what they were doing is rolling the safety over, which in effect became double coverage on Moss and taking away the deep ball. And the Jets just were not going to get beat by a deep ball. So what Matt Castle did was take advantage of the defense presenting to him the underneath routes to Welker. And that's what we saw that last year when Brady was quarterbacking. Why do you think Wes Welker had over 100 receptions? Because everybody didn't want to get beat by Moss.
There's not much difference. You're absolutely right. Now, in this case on Sunday, that one play, the one play where Castle threw to Moss deep and it ended up being underthrown and it wasn't caught. If that throw did reach Moss, that would have been a touchdown, and that's just an example of the one time where Moss does beat the cornerback, and that safety is not right there to help out the cornerback. Moss is going to be open, and it's just a matter of getting him the ball. And that play just didn't work out. Castle didn't get the ball there, but they're willing to be patient. And if the trend in the game is rolling that safety over, that's fine. If one time in the fourth quarter Moss is open because the safety didn't roll, they're gonna go to him. And Castle didn't hesitate to go to him.
Right.
It was just poor execution. They were patient. They waited for Moss to be, for that one play to come up. Tried it, failed. That's fine. They'll get it. They'll iron that out. Don't worry.
He has some good nitpicks here. He says, first of all, the things I saw that Matt has to work on. He telegraphs his throws. Even I could tell where he was going. He has to look for options, increasing his field vision. There's usually more than one option out there. He throws the ball exactly where the play calls for it to be without watching the progression of the receivers. All in all, a good first start, great presence. He seemed calm. He will get better. I can't argue with that.
No,
I think that will, again, come with more experience and more time and knowing where the checkoffs are down the line.
Yeah, and another thing that'll help, and this is more of a feel thing probably, is knowing where, when pass rushers are coming. I mean, there was a pretty rough stretch where he got sacked. I think it was 3 out of 4 offensive plays at one point in the third quarter, and he'll get a sense. He'll start getting a feel for, where the rushers are coming from as the course of a game goes on. And that's one thing Brady is outstanding at, is getting, eluding pass rushers. He might not be the most fleet of foot passer, but he can get out of, he can avoid the sacks, and Castle will get a feel for that too. But yeah, no, I think this was a solid performance in the standpoint of find the open guy, don't rush anything, and don't risk too many throws, and you'll be fine, and that's fine. That's what we'll see, and maybe as a couple weeks go on, I mean, hey, they got this game against Miami, and then a bye. There's a little bit of breathing room coming up before they get into that meat of the schedule.
I think having the bye early this year is going to benefit the Pats.
You know, it
normally I'd say that's week 4 is pretty early to have it. That's not going to help anybody.
No, that's a good point.
A good place to have it this year.
That's a good point, because you got to figure for Matt Castle.
Oh, yeah.
If the bye was in week 10, he wouldn't have a chance to breathe until then. Having a chance to sort of, say, take a deep breath.
Continue to progress.
Use that time, a combination of extra, extra on-field work,
right,
and just a little bit of, all right, I can, these first couple of performances, I can really not overload myself, but kind of take a look at what was good, what was bad, and just kind of get yourself into a good place as they get into the meat of the schedule and all the West Coast trips and Monday night game here and Sunday night game there, and it's gonna be quite a grind for that.
Give us a chance to play, match game a little bit earlier this
year
too.
Right. Oh, that's a bye week.
It's a bye week tradition.
Bye week tradition. That's right. I almost forgot. I can't wait for that. That's coming up soon.
Well, you'll be probably playing against one of our contestants.
Yeah.
You never know.
I can't wait. Yeah, as of what, 1 week from right now, we're the bye. It's a bye week.
That's right.
Basically,
you're absolutely right. A week from now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
We'll
boy, I need it. I need it, John.
You're bushed already.
I need a week off. I need a week off, man.
John says,
oh, wait, I don't get the full week off?
No,
Thought I did.
John also says, the tail end of his email, he says, on the positive, Kevin Faulk, amazing again. Lamont Jordan, Sammy Morris, hoorah. The secondary looked good, especially Hobbs. The front seven, amazing, and that sack by Thomas made my day. And in true form, the media meatheads who claimed we had no chance, rather than give us credit for a good game, blamed Mangini's play calling. Right.
Well, I think there was enough. I think there were a lot of storylines to go around. Was there some blame of Mancini's play calling?
Oh, yeah.
Especially
in New York. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure it was. Boy, I didn't hear the talk shows Monday morning, but those must have been pretty. pretty frenetic.
Yeah, I think so. Jack says, all right, the nitpicking is coming from being the most fortunate football fans for the last 7 years. We are so used to this high level of performance that when we become a plain old good team, we complain about it. During the Bledsoe days, did we ever see this happening? So let's come up with something to complain about. No, but I mean, I think he actually makes a pretty good point. During the Drew Bledsoe days, did we see this happening? I think we all hoped that we could progress to the point where, you know, something like that might happen, that we'd be bored with the fact that we're just a plain old good team and not an elite team. You know, every team strives to be like that. But, no, I don't think anybody ever sees that happen.
No, I think you can enjoy it. You know, there was certainly enjoy what happened last year, at least in the regular season. But this is going to be a different type of, you know, you're almost back to the underdog feel a little bit. And, you know, I mean, the players certainly took note of what was going on last week, which was, hey, the Patriots have no chance. And all that. This is fun. There's something about this sort of role. They embrace it, I think.
Yeah.
You know.
I think we can all embrace this role.
Sure.
A little bit. We talked last week about how this team is going to use this as, you know, internal motivation.
I think they already did.
They already have.
One for one. I mean, they definitely did last week, I think.
Yep. Yeah. All right. So here's the stuff to complain about, to nitpick on Nitpick Tuesday here. He says, number one, Lawrence Maroney. At what point are we going to realize that as much as we hope and pray, he's just not getting it done? Sure, he has great runs, but he's too inconsistent to be reliable. If he doesn't show the money this year, I think it's time he goes the way of Chad Jackson. No. See, I kind of disagree with you on that one, Jack. I get where you're going. But first of all, Chad was a number two pick. It was tough enough, I'm sure, for the team to swallow and cut him. But Maroney being number one, and the fact is, I didn't say Maroney didn't have talent. He has talent. He's just not durable. Mm-hmm. But when he's healthy, he's still very good. And so I think they feel like he can still be useful in a mix. But if he's a solo feature back like Corey Dillon was a few years ago, that ain't going to happen.
And you're right, what you said earlier. They probably, you know, they may have known that from the get-go. Like, this is a talented guy. Maybe he'll, you know, prove us wrong on the durability. But when he stepped in, he had Corey Dillon here. When Dillon left after 06, they brought in Sammy Morris. And you know, they brought in Sammy Morris to be the backup, but not just your normal backup. I mean, he was going to be, you know, regardless of how durable Lawrence Maroney was or wasn't going to be last year, Morris was going to play a role. You know, he obviously got hurt. But I definitely think that they're okay with this sort. That's what's happening in the NFL. I mean, how many lead running backs are there without really any kind of backup? There's a few, but even like, you know, you take like Willis McGahee in Baltimore. I mean, he's got backups. You know, Willie Parker. You know, they bring in Rashard Mendenhall in the first round. You know, then you don't bring in Rashard Mendenhall. When you already have Willie Parker, you don't bring in Rashard Mendenhall to overtake Willie Parker. You bring him in because you get two guys in there, and if one, even if a guy is durable, it's still, you know, you can still get hurt, and you have this other guy there to replace him. I mean, it's just good business in the NFL these days.
Says the secondary still allowing too much room. Although they played their bend but don't break style, it seemed like they really allowed the Jets to get a bit too much movement. I don't really have any problems with the secondary. I see what Jack is saying here, but I thought Ellis Hobbs had an outstanding day. And I think that Delta O'Neal is going to be the answer at the other corner. I don't know if that's going to allow, you know, Wheatley and Wilhite to continue to kind of like progress so they don't get thrown in there. But I think finding O'Neal has been a blessing for this team defensively.
Well, it certainly has. And when you consider the fact that, and this has surprised me, Terrence Wheatley and Jonathan Wilhite have barely played at all defensively through 2 weeks. Terrence Wheatley didn't even dress on Sunday. And that's an interesting one to be thinking about going forward, because you drafted these two guys in the second and the fourth round, Wheatley and Wilhite, respectively, and you knew you had no Asante Samuel, no Randall Gay, and some of these guys that they brought in the offseason, it wasn't like they were high-caliber players, Jason Webster and Lewis Sanders, and who would have thought that Lewis Sanders would be the guy to make it? So Delta O'Neal comes in, and we know what his credentials are, and you wonder on that cutdown day, and as they went into that first week of the season against Kansas City, maybe it's telling us that, you know, these rookies aren't quite ready. I mean, I figured Terrence Wheatley was going to start week one. After they cut...
I thought so, too.
Why can't I think of his name? After they cut...
Fernando Bryant.
Fernando Bryant, who started every preseason game. It was Hobbs and Bryant. When they cut Fernando Bryant, I said, Terrence Wheatley's their guy. I mean, Terrence Wheatley is their guy. And even when they signed Delta O'Neal, it was, okay, another one of those. Well, hey, this guy is off the, you know, there's a reason why he was cut by Cincinnati. Maybe he'll be in for a look, and maybe they realize, you know, he can't really play anymore. I figured Terrence Wheatley would be the guy. And all of a sudden, he's not dressed. He's a healthy scratch in week two. You know, if Delph O'Neal can step in and be as, you know, he's been pretty good these first 2 weeks in a tough situation to jump into. He was stunned to be cut by Cincinnati. And then to the next day be on the practice field for another team and learn what he needs to know, for this defense, is a challenge, as guys often admit. You know, they don't have a lot of depth at cornerback, so they need to take what they can get. And if O'Neal can be that guy, that's great. And maybe it'll just allow Wheatley and Wilhite to take their time to before they're ready to step right in.
The other thing that Jack complains about is the quieting of Randy Moss. Two receptions, not the performance we were used to last year. Matt will adjust and get better. Well, Moss had it taken away from him more so than Matt didn't go to him on Sunday.
Yeah, and like I said earlier, if that one play down the field was a completion and it was more of a Castle under throw than a Moss not able to catch it. If that took place, I mean, that was what, a 50-yard? That would have been
right.
a 50-something yarder. We would have seen, we would have been looking at Randy Moss's performance in a totally different light. You know, he didn't make that catch. I think we're going to need a little more of a sample size before we declare that Castle to Moss isn't going to be a productive unit. You know, I think we can very easily foresee this week against Miami, you know, Castle finding Moss for a couple touchdowns and all will be perfect in the Randy Moss world. It's not going to be 23 catches and 1,500 yards, 23 touchdown catches like it was last year. It probably won't be three either. It'll be somewhere in the middle. And, you know, let's just give it another more than 1 week before we declare that, you know, Randy Moss isn't going to catch passes from Matt Castle. I think they'll be able to work out some kinks, and you or I could throw a few passes.
Is it just me, or does anybody else sense something's bubbling, something's just starting to surface there? And I don't know if it's frustration from Moss or disappointment over Brady being out, or he doesn't have the same rapport with Matt Castle, or and maybe it's just because we all know of the Randy Moss from the past.
Right.
But does somebody think that there's just something underlying there that just doesn't seem quite right?
Yeah, I do. But you know what? Here's the thing. Why should he have the same rapport with Matt Castle right now that he does with Tom Brady? Why shouldn't he be upset?
But I'm hoping that he will develop whatever he can before he pops off if he does that.
Here's what I'd say. You hope that Randy Moss, who's now a captain, he's 31 years old.
Yep.
We know what his past was in Minnesota and Oakland, that he certainly had the ability and maybe still does have the ability to pop off and be frustrated and let it show and let it affect his play. I'm willing to give the Randy Moss of 2008 more than 1 week and more than a couple of little signs, which there were, and I agree with you. There were some signs that he was frustrated. I feel like on the touchdown, the Sammy Morris touchdown right before that play, the play that was Wes Welker's catch right up to the goal line that was almost a touchdown, I think Randy Moss was open in the end zone. I saw him waving his arms.
Yeah.
I think he felt that he was open, and you know what? He probably was frustrated after that, and maybe you're going to see that sometimes. I'm willing to give it more than 1 week and a couple of small possible notations of frustration before I declare that he's back to the Randy Moss of old. Is it possible? It is possible. I'm willing to give it a little more time.
Well, I'm just hoping that with a little more time, somehow they find a way to get him the ball.
and that should all
take care of itself.
And another benefit of the bye week, not just Matt Castle being able to take a deep breath, but maybe Matt Castle and Randy Moss able to work some things out on the practice field if they aren't already. I mean, you know, last week at practice, and we don't get to see all of practice, but even during stretching one day last week, and last week being the first week that Matt Castle's out there as number one quarterback, during stretching, that first row of the offense, which is, you know, usually some of the captains and the quarterbacks, Matt Castle and Randy Moss were sitting there stretching next to each other, and it seemed like communicating and trying to make sure they're on the same page, and you hope that both of them realize, hey, this is week one. They're not going to have the same rapport that Moss had with Brady, but you think that maybe it could develop. And I think they've shown signs that it could develop, and maybe there's some signs of frustration, too. We got to play it out a little bit here.
Our friend Irene in Tampa says, John, it's so good, as always, to hear your voice at the start of Patriots football.
That's what I say every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday myself.
Thanks, Brian.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you, Irene. A little off topic. I haven't had a chance to email before now, so I hope it's all right to make a statement or two. Irene, you know, I believe Irene is one of the few people that I absolutely know has been a part of this program for eight straight years now. This is the eighth season we've been here. And I remember her as far back as 01 when we first started this program. So say whatever you like, Irene. Trust me on this.
A charter member of the John Rook
Club. She is. Yeah, she's a charter member. It's hard to believe that Tom Brady will not be playing this year. The feeling I initially had was like most Wait until next year when we get him back and go from there. Now that it's been a couple of weeks, I have the same underdog feeling I had back in 01 when the Pats were overlooked and eventually the team just blew me away. It's not that coming from behind is more comfortable, but perhaps it's just that I like the expectation that we can always surprise people when they doubt it the most. I think that's why I like listening to Rodney Harrison's interviews. He usually makes me smile. After last year with the video stuff, the undefeated season, and all the passing receiving records up for grabs, I'm looking forward to this season to see what the Pats can come up with just to win each game. Pats in all caps. I think she's emphasizing the team aspect.
I gotcha.
I enjoy watching the defense play more so than the offense, so I'm hoping to see a lot of Richard Seymour, who looks healthy, Adalis Thomas, along with the new guys in the secondary, Delta O'Neal and Terrence Wheatley, who all seem to be playing well. I have no nitpicks. I'm just pleased they are 2-0. Thanks, John. I'm looking forward to listening to Smart Football Talk on Playbook.
There you go.
I think, well, though, that I think she speaks for
well
a lot of people.
Of. Yeah, well worded thoughts there. And I think, you know, when the expectation level is lowered, it opens up, you know, a whole new level of being able to enjoy what you're going to see. Because, you know, if they have a poor year, not that they're going to be making excuses, but hey, let's face it, they lose the reigning MVP, your expectation level is going to be lower. Now, around here, because they've won Super Bowls three times in the last 6 years, there's an expectation level, regardless of what players are in uniform, that's going to be there, and it's going to be hard to match. You know, but when you take it all into account, and you take into account what happened, you've got a little bit of the underdog mentality, you've got a little bit of the expectation level lowered, and it's going to make you appreciate the wins even more. I think that's what Irene is trying to say, is there'll be more of an appreciation level for what this team is able to accomplish this year than maybe what they did last year.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
We spent earlier in the program, for those that may have tuned in late, of course you can catch us on the replay later tonight here on .com, or download the podcast, make it easy on yourself.
Or do both.
Or you can do both. But I spent a little bit of time early in the program talking with Harvey Green, who is, of course, the VP, senior VP of media relations for the Dolphins. And, you know, if it just wasn't for the fact that he worked for one of the enemy, he'd be a great guy.
Yeah.
He really is. He's a very good guy. I've known Harvey, by the way. I met him in 1984, when we both worked for the U.S. Olympic Committee.
Mm.
Yeah, we both worked in the Olympic Games in Los Angeles.
Yep.
And we happened to stay at the same dormitory that they put us up in. That's where I first met Harvey. And it was right before he went to work for George Steinbrenner and the Yankees.
That's right. He was with the Yankees, yeah. And then now he's been with the Dolphins for a solid
20 years. Pretty much 20 years, or close to it. Anyway, at any rate, we were talking about the Dolphins and obviously some of the initial matchups and some of the different people and in places with Miami and how it is a different look and field of the organization, even though the results certainly haven't shown that on the field, at least not through 2 weeks anyway. Dan sends this email and says, guys, I watched the game, Arizona and Miami. Mm. He says, and Arizona is much improved. Miami could not run the ball. Pennington was chased around the backfield a lot. It was not a good day for the Miami Dolphins. So what I'm guessing here is he's saying that this was more of the same old Miami. I have a feeling that we may see that same thing on Sunday. I don't know. I'm kind of smelling if a rout is going to happen, this would be the one where it would happen.
Well, Miami's not very good right now, but when you think about, you know, the Patriots in 2000 when they had a major regime change, they were dreadful in 2000.
Right.
And, you know, it's hard to make a one-year turnaround. You know, they start to clean house. They bring in, you know, Parcells. They bring in Sperano, the general manager, Ireland. And, you know, if you have confidence that you have the right people in place, you kind of give a mulligan in year one. You hope that there's some progress made and that you discover some good young players. But I'm with you. I think this is a week where the right combination of catching a bad team, you know, early in the season before they can sort of form that identity. You know, the Patriots are really kind of on a little bit of a roll right now, and they're kind of fired up about – they're still going to be fired up about – you know, people don't think we can do much, and this is going to be.
They will play that card all year.
They'll play that card all year long. But you know, this is you're right. The one factor that maybe might preclude an absolute rout. I'm not saying Chad Pennington is any kind of all pro right now, but a lot of times with a team like this that's completely rebuilding, you see a young quarterback who's never really played before.
Pennington's always given the Patriots trouble.
He's
when
given
he was
the
with
Patriots
the Jets.
Stuff.
He's always had, you know, pretty solid games.
And Bill Belichick has said many times, and he said yesterday as well, we really respect what Chad Pennington can do. And I don't think that's a hollow remark. I think they do. I think they feel like, you know, this guy can manage a game and run an offense well. There are far better arms out there in the NFL, and there's guys who are more durable and who have better numbers. But Chad Pennington can get the job done. He probably just doesn't have the horses right now around him. That the rest of that team is rebuilding.
They need the Ronnie Brown Ricky Williams tandem to come through big time in an effort to force the Patriots to loosen up the secondary and provide more run support. If they can get Williams and Brown rolling, that's going to give Pennington more time to throw the football. They have to have that. So my guess is the Patriots will definitely be looking to stuff the run this weekend.
Yeah, they will, and they've done a decent job of that so far. Kind of what we were talking about. Thomas Jones had his moments on Sunday,
but
the red zone he didn't. Last week, they shut down Larry Johnson. The run defense is doing pretty well so far, and I bet that'll continue. But you're right, that's what they need. They have very young, unproven wide receivers, and kind of an offensive line that doesn't impress me too much, and this does have the makings of the chance of being a route. It's still
more so than some of the other games on down the season. Because of their catching the Dolphins at this stage of their season
at the right time. They had a winnable game against the Jets that they almost came back to, and they lost. They get routed by Arizona.
Right.
Their psyche is probably
going on the road and getting routed by Arizona. Now they get to come to New England and face a team that's wounded in their own right. And
it's a
sort of a confluence of different factors that spell to make it a long day.
Right.
If of course the Patriots take advantage of what they're supposed to take advantage of.
Exactly, and that's what they got to do. And the defense will continue to be fired up. They'll probably cause some problems for Pennington.
Do you have Brian any other general thoughts about what you've seen in the first couple of weeks? Not only about the Patriots, but the one thing that stands out to me, I'll give it to you right off the bat here, is Buffalo's play.
Mm.
Buffalo has been outstanding, and from the tape that I've seen of the Bills. These guys look legit.
And they've beaten two teams that had high expectations coming in. These two teams, Seattle and Jacksonville, might prove to be frauds, but at least at the time...
I don't think Buffalo is a fraud.
No, but I'm saying they beat two legit teams.
Sure.
I'm saying they beat
yes,
two
they
legit
did.
Teams. What I'm saying is maybe when the season's done, we'll see that Seattle isn't very good, and we'll see that Jacksonville isn't very good.
I think we're going to learn that already. Team is as banged up as any team in the league right now.
But coming into this year, if you're a Buffalo fan and you're seeing, boy, the first 2 weeks they're hosting, what is it? They played Seattle at home and then at Jacksonville.
Right.
Tough way to start out. I mean, those are two
pretty tough
teams.
It is.
They're 2-0. Very impressed by their quarterback, Trent Edwards. You got to be impressed by Marshawn Lynch, and they've got a solid group of wide receivers as well. That offense is pretty good, and their special teams is every year is tremendous, and they've got a solid defense. That is going to be a team to watch out for. That's a wild card team right now. I mean, that's a team that you got to figure has a pretty good chance. They've got a shot.
They have a legitimate shot, I think, of even challenging the Patriots in the division. They get a split against New England. Let's see what happens.
Right. I'm impressed by Tennessee so far, too. All the mess that's going on with Vince Young, for them to be 2-0 with those issues,
that's
a really good defense. They beat Jacksonville, and they beat Cincinnati. On the other hand, Cincinnati is one of the biggest, most disappointing teams.
What about Pittsburgh?
I think Pittsburgh is a pretty solid.
I thought they were lucky the other night against
Cleveland. I didn't see any of the game.
I watched most of it traveling back.
I'm not impressed by Cleveland. I wasn't impressed by
Cleveland's
coming
a disappointment in the negative side.
Correct.
A little bit.
I guess the jury's out on Pittsburgh, but I kind of think that they have as good an overall team. They don't have too many really definitive holes. I think that's a pretty solid team overall, and I think they'll be there in the end. They're a team that impresses me. Cleveland, I thought from the get go in the offseason, I thought they were being overrated. I think they've got a lot to prove beyond just 1 year, last year being 11-5 or whatever they were, 10-6.
Are you like me and hoping that San Diego finds a way to win their next two before they play New England?
and they'll get a little momentum,
a little something going here?
I'll tell you what.
If they're 0-4 or they're 1-3, look out.
You know what? Tough way to lose a couple of games, and obviously we see
especially the way they lost them. You might lose one game a year like that, but to lose two in the first 2 weeks?
Well, to lose two in the first 2 weeks on last-second touchdowns, obviously what happened against Denver with the referee call that the league has already announced was a bad call.
Was a mistake,
and mistakes happen. You don't want them to be...
You just don't want them to happen to you.
Happen to you at
but
that,
they happen. You're absolutely right.
At that point.
And
but,
I actually felt badly for Ed Hockley. I really... He seems to be one of the most, if not the most, respected referee in the league. He's been around for, 18, 19 years as an official.
There was no foul on the play. It was not a hold. The defender was just overpowered.
Yeah, and he has, are there any better biceps in the league
at the
referee position than this guy?
He's got great guns.
He does. But I feel bad, like you said, because in real time, as that play is happening, if he made a mistake, mistakes happen. By rule, I mean, he then, the mistake happened. He can't go back in time. By rule, he had to do what he did, which
right.
was
he had to blow the play dead. It was he blew the play dead. He can't do anything about it. You can't say, oh, sorry, forget that whistle.
But I liked a lot what Philip Rivers said after the game. It shouldn't have come down to that.
He's right.
You know what? And I thought he handled it a little more maturely than North Turner. I mean, I understand the frustration, but Philip Rivers said, hey, you know what? We should take care of business before that point.
Right.
And hey,
he's right.
You know what? He's right. Yeah, you don't want to go into an 0-4 San Diego team or 0-5. They might. I'm not sure if they have the bye.
I don't think they do.
Same way.
They
could.
Five, yeah.
They might have five games. You know. Yeah. The jury is definitely out on that team. But
I did see where Sean Merriman, by the way, had his ACL surgery. I guess yesterday or today. I just saw that on ESPN News. And so I find that kind of curious because generally they give injuries, once they decide to do that, a few weeks to sort of let the swelling go down before they do that. That's what they're doing in Brady's particular instance.
Right.
But they've decided to knife right away on Merriman.
The more intriguing surgery, though, I think is the one that poor Charlie Weiss is about to
Yeah, how about
on.
That?
Oh,
we talked
boy.
About that. I mentioned that earlier. I mean, talk about a guy that got decked. Oh. Wow, that was an owie. That was painful to watch. Because when he went down hard.
So maybe he and Brady can have surgery together and, recuperate together and
side by side beds.
You're gonna have
the same surgeries done.
Exactly. Just get the same doctor involved, get the same medicine. Just rehab together. They're at different stages in their careers though.
I don't think Tom wants to be around any of Charlie Weiss's rehab.
Right. Yeah. I think the rehab.
Put down the cheeseburger.
The rehab schedules might be a little different. But that's a tough one for Charlie. You feel bad right there, but. I'll tell you what an it's been an entertaining first 2 weeks of the season.
It has been. It certainly has not been boring.
Capped by last night's game.
That was an outstanding game to watch. Now,
that really was.
Admittedly, I've been a longtime Cowboy fan growing up in Texas, as you know. So, I mean, certainly I'm rooting for the Cowboys to beat the Eagles. I hate the Eagles. Never liked the Eagles. I'd root for, I wouldn't root for the Redskins over the Eagles, but that's, beside the point. At any rate, I think Dallas is one of the preeminently, the top talented teams in the league, bar none, especially offensively. Obviously, last night, they showed that they can be susceptible to the right thing at the right time defensively. But again, it's week two. I was real impressed with the Cowboys' ability to come from behind and take everything that Donovan McNabb threw at him. And by the way, is Donovan McNabb back to normal? And I'm saying that only because he had his injuries a couple of years ago, and it's taken him a couple of years to get back to being the kind of McNabb that we're used to seeing.
Yeah.
And I mentioned early in the program, I really believe that's going to be the same thing with Brady.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, similar stages of their careers that they have this injury. I mean, I think we
saw it with Carson Palmer as well with Cincinnati.
Yep. How's he doing, though?
Well, he struggled this year. But I'm talking about last year. Last year Carson Palmer had a pretty good year, and it was a couple of years removed from his injury.
Right, and the difference with Brady and both of those other guys, Palmer and McNabb, is with Palmer, it happened in the playoffs of a certain year. McNabb, it was in November. For Brady, if it's going to have to happen, how's week one?
Yeah.
You can completely, if you're
going to
be out for the, how's week one?
Even if he has a long rehab, he should be ready for training camp.
He should be ready for training camp, and he should be able to kind of pace himself over these next few months as he rehabs and not at all feel like, boy, I got to rush this.
Yeah, we're going to put a moratorium right now on how's Tom's knee?
Right.
We're going to put a moratorium on those questions. You may not ask that question.
Until February 10th. You can't
ask that until draft day.
Draft day. Okay.
When we talk about you can start asking about it.
If they draft a quarterback in the first round next April, then you can safely say, how's his knee?
we'll get a few more questions what's wrong with his knee?
That surgery let's not joke about that. But no, you're right. Let's
hold off on that.
He's not going to be around this year. Let's face it.
How was the initial fantasy lowdown?
You know
program?
What? It was good. It was a successful debut. I think we had a great guest from RotoWorld.com, Greg Rosenthal, who was able to give us some great insight. He's actually a local guy. He's from Massachusetts.
Cool.
It was good to talk to him. A few listeners and emailers chimed in with some of their questions. And like I said last week, it's all about it's a show for you. Throw your ideas around, vent, talk about the hot topics in fantasy sports.
What's going right with your team? What's not going right with your team?
Exactly. We'll be right back at it at 4 o'clock on Thursday, 48 hours from now on the nose. Looking forward to it. And the best thing about it, just like when you're talking about for this show and you're talking about the Patriots, is there's new material every week. It's never going to get old. There's new material every week, and we'll have some more guests, and certainly encourage you guys and anyone to call in or email in.
Part of the plan.
And Dan Tugender chimes in every now and then as well, which is a lot of fun for me. I don't know if it is for him, but it's a lot of fun for me.
Tugender.
Yeah, that guy, Tugender.
Need some fantasy help, do you, Dan?
He sure does.
Yeah, everybody.
He
lots sure of does. Help.
I don't know why you're coming to me if you do, but we had fun.
Yeah, right
we had fun last week. I hope to do so again.
And Patriots today. What we got today? Cooking?
Talking about some of the stuff we talked about today. The defense. How all eyes are on the defense now, and how I think I think they're going to step up and embrace the challenge. We've got that, and we have some fun too. Sometimes on Tuesdays, we had some interesting stuff we shot with fans at the home opener last week that we're talking about today. So if you were here at the game and you saw one of our cameras last Sunday, check out today's show because you might see yourself.
Ooh.
How about that?
And that's always special.
Always special. So, we got a few things cooking, and then, as we get to tomorrow, we'll start focusing on Harvey Green's Miami Dolphins.
There you go. I got to admit, Harvey is...
He is a good guy. Yeah,
he is one of the best guys. You'd think, how does this guy work in the NFL? Because he's not jaded. He's not bitter. Mm-hmm. He's not mean. He's not rude. Yep. He's just a nice guy. And you just can't say that about too many people in this business, unfortunately. Present company excluded, of
right.
course.
Right, and Dan and Gary with four of us, we're right. fine. Yeah,
right. Absolutely. Thanks, P-Lo.
Hey, thank you.
Good stuff. Brian Lowe, as he will be with us throughout the season on Tuesdays here on Patriots Playbook. And, of course, don't forget the Fantasy Lowdown on Thursdays at 4 p.m. Eastern time right here on Patriots.com radio. That's it for our program today. Don't forget Inside the Hall with Andre Tippett and Brian Morey is coming up next here on Patriots.com radio. Did I get that right? Yes.
Yeah, you did, but I don't see Brian anywhere.
Oh, he's doing this one live. We didn't pre-tape this, huh? All right, well, I'm not doing a soft shoe. Sorry, I don't do soft shoe on radio. So maybe you get to listen to a lot of, hey, let's put a lot of those Patriots bratwurst commercials on right now. Like we don't ever, yeah, like that.
When you got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers, mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.